This is LA's home for the Dodgers.
Somehow makes the play.
And you're listening to Off-Season Dodger Talk.
He bobbles it, which falls face first, somehow picks it up, throws behind his back with his face in the dirt, throw to first base to Gonzalez and makes the play.
Call 866-987-2570 and talk to your host, David Massey.
Thanks for sticking with us. Appreciate you sitting through that and anticipating Dodger Talk on Dodgers Radio, AM 570 LA Sports. Taking your phone calls until 9 o'clock tonight at 866-987-2570. Former Dodger and 22-year Major League veteran Gary Sheffield will join us in our next segment. And Gary was one of my favorite guys to cover with the Dodgers, and we look forward to hearing from him tonight. He's on the Hall of Fame ballot again, and hopefully he gets more percentage of the vote than he did last year. This will be the third year on the ballot for Sheff, and last year he only had 11% of the vote. And there's actually two former Dodgers that I think have not been getting the rightful consideration that they deserve in the Hall of Fame ballot. I'll let you know who the other one is in just a moment. But we are celebrating Vin Scully's trip to the White House today. He received the Presidential Medal of Freedom along with 20 other incredible people that were assembled in Washington, D.C. at the White House today. Guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Jordan, Ellen DeGeneres, Robert De Niro, Tom Hanks, Bill Gates, Lorne Michaels, Diana Ross, among the others that were given the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the highest medal and honor a civilian can receive from the president. And our very own Vin Scully was deservedly so, one of the 21 that were there. And I'll let you hear what President Obama had to say about Vin Scully before presenting him the Presidential Medal of the right audio from what President Obama had to say about Vin. It was from earlier today, but we'll get that for you in just a moment. But it was just a really great day for all the people that were assembled at the Oval Office today, because you really look at the collection of people that were there, and for Vin Scully to be one of those people was pretty incredible. And the Dodgers are not done honoring Vin Scully. On May 3rd, the Dodgers promotional schedule has come out today. And during the regular season, May 3rd, before the Dodgers play the San Francisco Giants, they will honor Vin Scully. And also on that Dodgers promotional schedule, the unveiling of Jackie Robinson's statue at Dodger Stadium on Jackie Robinson Day. It will be the 70th anniversary of Jackie Robinson making his major league debut. So it will be a very special season at Dodger Stadium, in particular those 2 days, May 3rd for Vin Scully, and also I believe it's April 15th on Jackie Robinson Day for the unveiling of the statue and celebrating Jackie Robinson. And, you know, talking about Vin Scully and being there with President Obama, our only black president, just think about what Vin Scully has seen in his lifetime. We talk about Jackie Robinson making his major league debut 70 years ago. I know Vin was not calling Dodger games at that time, but obviously was around. And it's just amazing that he lived through everything that he did. And here he was standing inside the White House with President Barack Obama. And we do have the audio of what President Obama had to say about Vin before honoring him with the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
The game of baseball has a handful of signature sounds. You hear the crack of the bat. You got the crowd singing in the seventh inning stretch. And you've got the voice of Vin Scully. Most fans listen to a game's broadcast when they can't be at the ballpark. Generations of Dodgers fans brought their radios into the stands because you didn't want to miss one of Vin's stories. Most play-by-play announcers partner with an analyst in the booth to chat about the action, then worked along and talked just with us. Since Jackie Robinson started at second base, then taught us the game and introduced us to its players, he narrated the improbable years, the impossible heroics, turn contests into conversations. When he heard about this honor, Vin asked with characteristic humility, "Are you sure? I'm just an old baseball announcer." And we had to inform him that to Americans of all ages, you are a old friend. In fact, I thought about him doing all these citations, which would have been very cool, but I thought we shouldn't make him sing for a supper like that. Up next.
And that was President Obama today at the White House as Vin Scully was honored with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. And if you log on to Twitter or Dodgers.com, I'm sure you could find it there as well. But there's a great short video of Vin Scully getting up with the orchestra that was playing in the after party of Take Me Out to the Ball Game and conducting the orchestra. So that was pretty amazing, too. He was very excited and honored and humbled to be there. You could see that in his body language, his face, his expressions, as President Obama was putting that Medal of Freedom around his neck. So a great day for Vin Scully and everybody else that was honored for the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And congratulations to a great Laker, a great UCLA Bruin, and a guy that was great on and off the court, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All right, let's get to the hot stove news of the day. And really, it's kind of quiet as far as the Dodgers and rumors are concerned. Yes, they are interested in several second basemen, Ian Kinsler, Brian Dozier, and now a new name has emerged from the Tampa Bay Rays. Their second baseman, Logan Forsythe, who's actually been one of the better under-the-radar players in the American League. He hit 20 home runs last year for the Rays. He's everything that, obviously, Andrew Friedman values, since he did acquire him when he was in charge of the Rays as well. And it wouldn't be a stretch if he tried to acquire him with the Dodgers as well. Because if you look at the Dodgers' trades and transactions with certain teams under the Andrew Friedman era, they've really made trades with probably five or six teams, and that's a familiarity that goes along with making deals. You got to have a relationship with these GMs. And obviously, Andrew Friedman does have a relationship with Matt Silverman, who's in charge of the Rays. You look at the other teams that the Dodgers have made deals with, the Phillies, the White Sox, the Reds, the Braves. Seems to be those are the usual suspects when it comes to Andrew Friedman making deals, so it's not out of the realm of possibility. Also, the Dodgers did engage the Pirates' last trade deadline for their closer, Mark Melancon, before he was traded to the Washington Nationals. From what I was told at the time, the Dodgers had a couple of pitchers in mind that they wanted to send to the Pirates, but things got in the way as far as where they were health-wise, and the deals could not be consummated for Melancon. So I'm bringing that up because there's one Pittsburgh Pirate that I want playing for the Dodgers next year, and you should want it too. That's right fielder Andrew McCutchen, who is a former MVP back in 2013, is still a very good player. I don't know if he's good defensively anymore in center field, but I think he would look pretty good in Dodger blue in right field. The only problem is you have Yasiel Puig. And from what I've been told, the value of Yasiel Puig on the trade market is not any higher than it was before they sent him down last year. So they may be stuck with him. And that may be a good thing. That may be a bad thing, depending on how Andrew Friedman views it. Is he hoping that this is the year it clicks for Yasiel Puig? He was hoping that would be the case last year, and it never really happened. And in fact, it really hasn't happened for Puig since the first half of 2014. Now, I know Dodger fans are very passionate about Yasiel Puig and enjoy him playing for the Dodgers, but how could you want Yasiel Puig over Andrew McCutchen? If you have to take less for Puig to open up a spot for McCutchen, it's a no-brainer, in my opinion. And I'm not just throwing out a frivolous trade rumor out there. Clint Hurdle, the Pirates manager, told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette last week that the door is open for the Pirates to trade Andrew McCutchen because he is a free agent in 2 years. And the likelihood of the Pirates re-signing him for the dollars that he will command on the open market, even at this stage of his career, are slim to none. So they could get more for him now with the team having him under control for 2 more years before free agency rather than holding on to him as a rental. And he's a guy that I advocated for during the season leading up to the deadline, and he is a guy that mashes left-handed pitching. He was a little bit down last year, but overall in his career, he mashes left-handed pitching. Andrew McCutchen in right field, what do you think? 866-987-2570 is the phone number. Pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. When we come back, I'll let you know who the two former Dodgers that I believe belong in the Hall of Fame and have gotten shortchanged. And we'll hear from one of them, Gary Sheffield, later in the show. Dodgers Radio, AM 570, LA Sports. David Vasse with you until 9 o'clock tonight.
This is the home of the Dodgers.
Call us, tweet us, tag us. It's 866-987-2570 or hashtag Dodger Talk.
David Vasse with you until 9 o'clock tonight on Dodger Talk, taking your phone calls at 866-987-2570. Pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Gary Sheffield coming up at the bottom of the hour. We want to remind you about the Dodgers and Chicago White Sox second annual adult fantasy camp taking place at Camelback Ranch, where both teams train January 15th to the 21st. Some of the great Dodgers that will be participating in the Dodgers fantasy camp are Eric Caro, Steve Sachs, Pedro Guerrero, Eric Gagne, and the Hall of Fame manager, Tommy Lasorda, will be out there as well. You can go to Dodgers.com/fantasy camp for your more information and to sign up. I was also talking about Andrew McCutchen. Dodger fans, I believe he should be the Dodger right fielder next year, not Yasiel Puig. 866-987-2570 is the phone number. Pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Clint Hurdle, the Pirates manager last week, basically said McCutchen is available and the Dodgers desperately need some production from the right side in their outfield. He would be perfect alongside Jock Peterson playing center field, McCutchen playing right field. Just think about the outfield defense there is. And obviously Puig is really good defensively, but offensively has left a lot to be desired. Not only that, he's not a very good base runner and really is a one-dimensional player, in my opinion, at this point in time in his career. He's basically a very good defensive player. He's not a very good offensive player. And McCutchen, his resume speaks for itself, and he can hit left-handed pitching, something that Puig did better at after he got called back up, but really wasn't that effective. That combination of Reddick and Puig was non-productive from day one. Puig, the majority of the shares before the trade deadline, and when Reddick got in there, he wasn't very productive either. 866-987-2570 is the phone number, pound blue, for our AT&T subscribers. Also, want to bring up, you know, we're talking about trades and free agency and all that, which is great, but we still don't have a collective bargaining agreement. And the players and the owners still have not been able to come to any resolution. There's been a lot of talk, but there has been no deal consummated between the players and owners. And tonight, Ken Rosenthal tweeted out a story where he is citing sources from both sides that are saying that if no deal is struck by December 1st, the owners will lock out the players. And that would bring a halt to the offseason. Some of the issues that are up in the air that's holding up a deal is the qualifying offer for players, where free agents that are offered the qualifying offer and turn it down, there's a draft pick attached to them. Also, rosters possibly expanding from 25 to anywhere between 26 and 27. And also, I know talking to players during the season, I think they want to ease up on the rigorous travel and back-to-back games, and not the back-to-back games, but traveling east to west or west to east and just trying to make it a more efficient schedule. So I've been one of the guys that have believed all along that if a deal wasn't consummated during the regular season or shortly thereafter, it was nervous time, and it is nervous time right now. Now, maybe they get a deal done, but we're not that far away from December 1st. Thanksgiving is the day after tomorrow. Are these guys really going to lock themselves in a bargaining room until December 1st to get a deal done? And it doesn't seem like these issues are as big as some in the past. And the one I'm thinking of is 94 when we lost the World Series. There was major, major differences and a major gap between the owners and players as far as disparity between the high revenue teams, the low revenue markets. And part of the reason why they couldn't get a deal done is because the owners were divided and couldn't get on the same page either. So that's when, you know, they basically, the small market teams made a coup and had Bud Selig become the commissioner of baseball. The Milwaukee Brewers owner, along with Jerry Reinsdorf, they all kind of basically set this up where an owner represented the owners, and it was a small market owner that won out and put this luxury tax in place that we have right now. And Rob Manfred, who is now the commissioner, actually negotiated the past three labor deals. The players' union has a new guy and a former player in Tony Clark. So that's part of the sticking point where maybe a new negotiator from the player side is holding things up. So we'll see how it plays out. But everybody was so gung-ho, and I think everybody was just ignoring the elephant in the room, and that is you don't have a bargaining agreement. And if you don't have a bargaining agreement, how are teams going to set up their payroll, their off-season, and how are they going to know how to operate if the rules are not in place? Now, the rules may not change that drastically, but you don't have a CBA. You don't have much of an outline to work with. So hopefully there is not a work stoppage. And if there is a work stoppage, there's a chance that the winter meetings are canceled in Washington, D.C., because that's baseball's convention of getting all these people in one place at the same time to work on deals and trying to make trades and sign free agents. So in the coming days or so, well, hopefully we have more clarity, but I'm not very optimistic right now as it stands that the players will not be locked out on December 1st. 866-987-2570 is the phone number, pound blue, for our AT&T subscribers. And, you know, even if that lockout lasts a week, 2 weeks, it just shouldn't come to this. The sport is making more money than they ever had, and it doesn't seem like the issues are as big as they have been in the past. And I think one of the sticking issues from players is that why should international players be given a boatload of money when they haven't even set foot on a Major League Baseball field or a professional baseball field in the minor leagues? And guys like Chris Bryant are constricted to being drafted. And I think they're trying to figure out an international draft, but the logistics of that are very complicated. So we'll see how it plays out. 866-987-2570 is the phone number, pound blue, for our AT&T subscribers. Coming up at the bottom of the hour will be Gary Sheffield, the former Dodger, the 22-year veteran, a man that I believe belongs in the Hall of Fame after hitting over 500 home runs, having over 1,600 RBIs. If you look at what Sheffield's body of work was, he was one of the most dominant players of his era. He hit more home runs than these Hall of Famers, Lou Gehrig, Stan Musial, Willie Stargell, Dave Winfield, Andre Dawson, Joe DiMaggio. He drove in more runs than these all-time greats as well, Ernie Banks, George Brett, Mike Schmidt, Tony Perez, Mickey Mantle, Roberto Clemente, and you're telling me he's only getting 11.6% of the vote from writers? And I know there's that issue with the whole steroid era, and I know he was linked to that cream that's clear, that's not clear. And he was very honest about it. He did not know what he was putting on his knee, and he stopped it. And that's, you could say he did more than what players were doing at that point in time. It's one thing for Andy Pettit and these other guys to say it 10, 15 years later. How about doing it in the moment like Gary Sheffield did? And I'm actually one of the unique people that can vouch for him, because when he was in his final offseason with the Dodgers, I was trying to get him to come on a radio show, and I called him, and he was actually working out with Barry Bonds in San Francisco or in the Bay Area. And we were talking about it. I asked him how it was going, and he said, you know what? I don't like it here. There's something not right here, and I don't think I'm going to come back in a couple of days. And then you hear about all this other stuff, that the Balco, the cream, the clear, all that stuff. I think he started to find out what Barry was doing. And if you look at his body shape, it didn't drastically change. He was a great player in 92, and he's a great player in 2000. And he should be in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. Also, another guy that's never been linked to any steroids is former Dodger second baseman Jeff Kent, who's only gotten 14% of the vote last year. This will be his fourth year on the Hall of Fame ballot. You're telling me the guy that has the most home runs as of any second baseman in the history of the game can only get 14% support from the writers? If you look at his numbers as well, they're at the top of every offensive category of any second baseman in the history of the game. Jeff Kent should be in the Hall of Fame and most certainly should get more than 14% of the vote. If you ask me, Jeff Kent deserves to be in the Hall of Fame before Jeff Bagwell, who just barely missed it last year at 71%. And you look at some of the new guys coming on the ballot this year, it's going to make it more difficult for guys like Sheffield, Jeff Kent, guys like Trevor Hoffman, who's 67%, Tim Raines at 69%, Curt Schilling, if you're a believer in that. Vladimir Guerrero most certainly will probably get into the Hall of Fame, but you look at his numbers, besides batting average, he doesn't have more home runs than Gary Sheffield. He doesn't have more RBIs than Gary Sheffield. Ivan Rodriguez, Hall of Famer, but also part of that steroid era. Are writers going to forgive that there were some rumors and innuendos about him? He's a 13-time Gold Glove Award winner. He has, 1,332 RBIs. He's an NLCS MVP. He should be in the Hall of Fame, too, in my opinion. Manny Ramirez on the ballot as well this year. So your thoughts on who should be in the Hall of Fame? Jeff Kent and Gary Sheffield, in my opinion, should be on it. And one of those men will join us next. Gary Sheffield, the chef, will join us on Dodger Talk next on AM 570 LA Sports.
This is the home of the Dodgers.
Call us, tweet us, tag us. It's 866-987-2570 or hashtag Dodger Talk.
This is Nissan Dodger Talk. David Basse with you until 9 o'clock tonight. And right now we are joined by one of the best hitters of his generation. Not only hitters, because I think that would shortchange him, but he was one of the best players of his generation. 22 seasons in the major leagues, and a man I believe belongs in Cooperstown. A guy that hit over 500 home runs, drove in over 1,600 runs, and has done more in this game than a lot of guys that have a plaque in Cooperstown. That's former Dodger World Series champ Gary Sheffield. Chef, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Yeah, the one thing that people don't realize, and some of these current Dodgers don't realize, Chef, that I travel with, my baseball life did not start with them. My baseball life started in the corner of the old Dodger clubhouse with you and Marquise Grissom. You guys were always great to me there, and that's when it started for me in 1999.
Yeah, that's the same for me. You know, the guys that played before me, they paved the way. Taught me how to be a man in the game when I was 18, 19 years old. And I owe a lot of gratitude to those guys because they didn't have to do that.
Yeah, and you never had to be as open and honest with me as you were, and I always appreciated that.
Well, I'm all about truth, and, you know, like I said before, when I'm being reported on, you know, when people talk about the game and the way I played the game, you know, I have no problem talking about that, whether I did good or bad in the game, and that's the way I wanted to keep it.
How much does it mean to you, Chef, to get into the Hall of Fame? If for some reason you never make it in there, would that be a piece of you missing as far as your baseball career?
Well, I mean, I didn't, you know, suit out to be a Hall of Famer when I, you know, I signed up to play baseball. I just tried to make a living for my family and do something that I love doing since I've been doing it since I was 8 years old. This is something I know very well. I know how to do. I had no problem playing the game. I had no difficulties playing the game. And so, you know, I let my body of work speak for itself. And, you know, I know my peers that I play with respect everything I did and respect the competition. And I'm sure a lot of the guys that's in my era that's made it, I'm sure that they wouldn't have no problem with me being in there.
Yeah, I think that speaks volumes because you talk about your peers. Does that mean more to you than even if you were to make it into the Hall of Fame, knowing that the best of the best consider you on their level?
Absolutely. You know, it wasn't a matter of I was on their level. They was on my level as well.
Yeah.
You know, I talk to Pedro Martinez all the time. And if you look at, guys that face Pedro Martinez, I can guarantee you Pedro Martinez didn't look at me as just a regular hitter. He respected me just like I respected him. I won a lot. He won a lot. So, you know, I think we're pretty much even.
Gary Sheffield is our guest on Dodger Talk. And if you look at it, Chef, I'm not even sure you realize where you rank in history of baseball. You have hit more home runs than guys like Lou Gehrig, Stan Musial, Willie Stargell. And you've driven in more runs than Hall of Famers like Ernie Banks, Tony Perez, Mickey Mantle, the great Roberto Clemente. When I say that to you, how does that hit you? And are you surprised that more voters don't realize that as well?
Well, numbers speak for themselves. You know, nobody did put up those numbers but me. Those are numbers that when I put on the uniform, I knew I was going to be the best player on the field, if not one or two best players on the field. So every day I walked on the field, I knew I was going to be the best. And if you don't get rewarded for it, just like I never got rewarded for MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see guys putting up numbers now, you know, those are my average years. And so, you know, with that being said, you know, when anybody is voting for you for anything, you know, they get the final say. And if Major League Baseball and the historians and the fans are comfortable with that, so am I.
We all see Gary Sheffield now doing great work on Turner on TBS during the postseason. Do you think now people view you differently than they did as a player because you're showing more of who you are, being able to have that platform to really express yourself?
Well, I think TV gives you the opportunity to show your funny side, show your human side. You know, when I'm playing baseball, there's a bunch of seriousness going on, and I took the game very serious. And I wasn't a guy that can laugh on the field and joke around and still focus on the task at hand. You know, I was put in a situation where I had a lot of obligations and a lot of responsibility hitting third in a lineup for every team I ever played on, and having to be the one of the best I ever played on. So. You know, with that being said, you know, I'm comfortable with everything that happened.
And that's one thing being around you with the Dodgers, Chef, is you were about winning. You weren't just about your own personal stats. If you were upset, it wasn't just because you didn't do well. It was because the team wasn't playing well.
Yeah, it was a matter of, you know, I could have sat back and been the typical Joe, just go out and do my body of work and not care about the team and not care about the city and not care about winning. You know, I spoke up for causes that, you know, I know guys that was not in the situation that I was in that couldn't speak up about. So I was able to speak for them. And, you know, I took a lot of bullets and a lot of grief for, you know, other players. And I'm comfortable with that. I had a lot of players come up to me and tell me, you know, Gary, you don't have to fight my fight. You know, you know, you can't just take on everybody's responsibility. You have to take care of yourself. But it was an obligation I felt that I had to do to bring about change. And if you look at, the election and what the world is going through now, it's all about making a difference. And I tried to make a difference in other people's lives, even if it affected mine.
Do you feel like you can still do that on TV, Chef? Is that part of the reason why you decided to go that route?
Yeah, I was asked when I retired, 2 days after I retired, you know, ESPN wanted me to do full time. But I had, you know, I got a 14-year-old, 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old, and I have a kid in college, and I have my other son in finishing high school. So I wanted to be there for them, so I couldn't do it full time. I have a lot of knowledge of the game that they wanted to exploit and, you know, and a lot of passion that I have. So I chose to do TBS because it's more short term and allows me to spend, you know, most of my time with my family and allows me to talk about the game that I know and love.
When you were playing, we always used to have a lot of conversations about the way baseball was marketing the stars of the game, and in particular, the African-American stars in the game. Where do you think that's at right now? And in some ways, do you think you're marketing the game for baseball because you have that type of platform being on TV? And Dusty Baker was with you. Pedro Martinez is with you. Do you think you guys kind of help promote the game with some kids that may not gravitate towards baseball?
Well, you know, I'm doing more than just TV. I'm trying to build a sports complex to give kids the opportunity to develop not only in baseball, but their mind and everything they hold well-being. So when they get to the big leagues, they're ready. You know, I came up to the big leagues at 18 years old. I wasn't ready mentally. I was ready physically. So my mental wouldn't let my performance show. And when I got a chance to move on to San Diego and get around people that I was familiar with and comfortable with and trusted, I was able to flourish from there. I almost won a triple crown. And so, with you know, when you get around things in situations like that, you know, you're more relaxed and you can just focus on baseball and nothing else.
Was 1992 your best season when you came short of the triple crown, Chef?
No, not even close.
Really? Which one do you consider your best?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I think my best year really is probably it was in Atlanta when I hit 330 with 39 home runs and 136 RBIs. And I think I scored like 120-something or 30-something runs and walked like 160-something times. And so that's not being done today. And I did that for a whole decade. Mm-hmm. And nobody is doing that at this point. You know, they putting up big, you know, some kids putting up numbers. But they don't have the walks that we had. We had to walk 120, 140 times and still put up the same numbers they're putting up.
Yeah, and one thing, too, I talked to a lot of players that used to play the game. The one thing that irritates them is the number of strikeouts and how it seems to be more accepted than it was even when you were playing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a sense of pride when you don't want to strike out. And so you have, it's about a sense of pride, and if you don't have pride in yourself, you know, and an organization don't make make it pretty much mandatory to be that complete player. You know, why worry about it if they're going to pay you that kind of money to strike out 180 times and drive in 80 runs and I can get paid like this? So why worry about it?
And one thing Gary Sheffield never did in 22 years of playing in the big leagues is strike out 100 times in a season. How about that? I didn't even realize that until I started to look at it, Chef.
And if I was playing now, I still wouldn't.
Gary Sheffield is our guest. Before I let you go, Chef, obviously, you know, you confided in me a lot, and I've actually shared the story of when you went to work out with Barry Bonds in San Francisco and called me and told me that you didn't feel like something was right over there. And the reason why I bring it up now is because I feel like you're kind of a victim of the era that you played in, and you came out and were very honest with things. And I'm your star witness because I spoke to you then, and you're the one that bailed and pulled the parachute out and knew something was not right.
Well, you know, you're a product of your environment, and I've always been conscious of when we go on the road, you know, you get your hanger-ons and you get people to come around and offer you, you know, drugs, like and illegal drugs, like, you know, all kinds of sorts of drugs, not just performance enhancements, but other kind of illegal drugs. And I've never put a marijuana joint to my mouth. I never took any drug in my life, and I never will. And that's what I preach to my kids, regardless of what somebody think or what they may say. only God knows, and I can take that to the grave. And like I said before, even being in a situation, people have to use their common sense when it comes to my situation, because if Barry Bonds is hitting 70 home runs or whatever he was hitting, and I was hitting 43 home runs, why would I need to go seek out Barry Bonds to hit 73 home runs? Because I'm comfortable hitting 40-something home runs, and the most common sense is I never looked like him.
Yeah.
So why would I go work out with somebody and I look different than them? So that means I'm gonna be taking something different, you know. So just use your common sense, and leave it at that. And I would even bring something even farther. The Mitchell report. When the Mitchell report came out, they told all of the guys and that he had to interview. That it's mandatory. That Bud Selig said it was mandatory that you meet with him. And I was all for it. I wanted to tell my side of the story, and then I was gonna come with it. And then that way, I know for a fact I'll be exonerated. And the Mitchell guy, he never even met me, never talked to me, but I'm in his report. And so what that says to me is, you know, what world we live in when you can write something and put something on paper and put somebody in a situation where they're guilty of something that you never investigated, you never talked to, and you never done anything. So that's like me just making something up and then just rolling with it, and that's how you affect people's lives. And so that's what he did in my situation. I don't know about other guys. And the other thing is that no, Bud Selig don't tell y'all either, is that he called me in the commissioner's office, and when I did the Brian Gumbel and said steroids was involved in this game. And I told him I was the first person to go to him and make him aware of it back in 1998-99 season. And so for it to come out that late, basically he sat on it.
Yeah, because they were all profiting by guys like McGuire and Sosa, and after they were used and abused, they kicked them to the curb.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and Chef, I appreciate you being as honest as you've been, as always. Like I told you, you are a star on TV. Nobody ever would have guessed that. And I'm happy that a big TV star like you would still return a radio guy's call like me, so I appreciate that.
Absolutely, no problem.
And hopefully one day I will be in Cooperstown when your plaque is there, and I'll bring my kids to the Hall of Fame and show them Gary Sheffield's plaque, because you deserve to be there.
Yep, God willing.
All right, Chef. Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
And that was Gary Sheffield. Pretty candid stuff there. I was shocked by some of the things he actually told you, because he's just told me some of those things privately, and that's who he is. He's got nothing to hide. That's why I believe that when it comes to linking him to using steroids, I don't think it's there. Obviously, he used some substance that was illegal, and when he found out it was illegal, he stopped using it. And it's not like his numbers skewed completely differently than where they were before that whole incident, which, by the way, was, what, a half a season? It just doesn't add up. And I think some of the writers did not like him when he was playing, and that may have given them the excuse of not having to vote for him. So I think Jeff Kent falls into that kind of category as well. He was not warm and fuzzy with the writers, and I think that's being held against him wrongfully. You look at some of the guys in the Hall of Fame right now, they're not the best of guys, and that's not, I guess there is some sort of criteria for it, but then take Ty Cobb out of that because he was not a great guy. It's about what you did on the field. And Jeff Kent never hurt anybody. He was never arrested. He did fight Barry Bonds in the dugout, and I'm sure a lot of people wanted to, but Jeff Kent deserves to be in that Hall of Fame and deserves more than 14%, and Gary Sheffield deserves a lot more than 11% of the ballot. So we'll see how it plays out. A lot of new and popular players are on the ballot here in the Baseball Hall of Fame for 2017, including Yvonne Rodriguez, Vladimir Guerrero, and then you have the holdovers of Tim Raines, who I believe this will be his last year on the ballot for the writers to vote for him. And Jeff Bagwell got 71% of the vote. you want to talk about things that don't look right and passing the eye test? How does Jeff Bagwell get 71% of the vote last year? Anyway, want to update you, too, about the Dodgers Fantasy Camp. I mentioned that earlier in the show. It's the second annual Dodgers and White Sox Fantasy Camp. It's from January 15th to January 21st. Great Dodgers like Eric Karros, Pedro Guerrero, Eric Gagne, Tommy Lasorda will be there. Dodgers.com/fantasy camp is where you want to go to sign up. And also on Blue Friday, the day after Thanksgiving at Dodger Stadium from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., not only can you get great deals on Dodgers merchandise up there at the top of the park, but the 1988 World Series trophy will be there for you to take your picture with between 10 and 5 p.m. on Blue Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. So if you want more information on that, go to Dodgers.com/Blue Friday, and they'll have somebody set up there where you could sign up for your 2017 Dodger Mini Plan package, which includes Vin Scully Honoree Day, where they're honoring Vin Scully on May 3rd, and also the unveiling of the Jackie Robinson statue at Dodger Stadium on Jackie Robinson Day, which will be the 70th anniversary of him breaking the color barrier in baseball. All right, before we say goodnight, we got to go out to our friend Isabel, who's a loyal listener. Hi, Isabel.
Hey, David, how are you?
Doing good. Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, you too, you, your family. I need to talk to Ronnie after, so can you put me on hold?
You're the one.
Anyway.
He's excited to talk to you, too.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, I'll make this quick. First of all, I'm so tired, please. So we can get Andrew McCutcheon, if I can say his name right, yeah. As a longtime Dodgers fan, I'm just so sick of Puig right now. And please, I cannot go through another strike. So I'm still trying to recover from 94. But anyway, but I just cannot go through another strike. So I just hope, and when you say about the player Europe, yeah, give me a break. They're getting more money. They didn't even hit the major. Yeah, give me a break. So.
All right, Isabel. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. There have been legitimate roadblocks between the players and owners, so much so that Ken Rosenthal, who is plugged in with the owners and players, wrote a column tonight saying that there is the real possibility of a lockout on December 1st, which is very hard to believe considering the prosperity of the game right now. But hopefully it gets resolved rather quickly and it doesn't bleed into the new year, because there is no reason for baseball to have a work stoppage, especially after great World Series, a great postseason. So I think things are on hold right now with the Dodgers and other teams until they find out the framework of this new CBA. Thanks to Ronnie Fascio for his help tonight. Thanks to Gary Sheffield for calling in. Appreciate it. We will be back with you next Tuesday right here on AM570 LA Sports Dodgers Radio. If you missed any of the show, you could podcast it at AM570radio.com. Have a great night, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.